Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Parents everywhere care about how their young children are taught sexuality and gender identity. That's why nearly every public school in the country that provides sexuality education requires parental consent first. But Montgomery County is an extreme outlier, insisting that every elementary school student must be instructed that, among other controversial matters, doctors guessed at their sex when they were born, and that anyone who disagrees is hurtful and unfair. Forcing petitioners to submit their children to such instruction violates their religious beliefs and directly interferes with their ability to direct the religious upbringing of their children.
So this is the voice of Eric Baxter. He is one of the two attorneys that was arguing at the Supreme Court against the state of Maryland. And in this particular case, what you've got is, as he said, you have a school district in Montgomery County that basically enacted a policy where they're going to teach K through 6 kids about how transgender is normal and about how, you know, same-sex attraction is normal. And when they are getting pushback from parents about wanting to be notified about this, wanting to opt their students out, they actually go the other way and they cancel the notification and they cancel the opt-out. And some of the books that they're using in these exposure times, if they, you know, to use the most neutral language, explain to the kids who might ask questions about these things that, you know, what they're trying to do is disabuse them or take away their binary thinking about sexuality and their cis normativity or their heteronormativity, that they're trying to teach them how to be, you know, better citizens of a world in which everything is accepted. As he said, the phrase, which, as John, as much as I have tried to pay attention to the various arguments and issues surrounding all of the gender and sexuality issues, you know, I do pay attention to this stuff. We talk about this enough. It's often the subject of our Transgressors Memorial Service. Even I had never heard the phrase guessed at their gender at birth. That's apparently the new lingo. new lingo is that the doctors were guessing at your gender at birth.
Guessing.
They were looking at your parts and, you know, rolling the dice and be like, ah, Yahtzee, look, gender conforms with body. Or, no, dang it, you know. guessing at your sexuality is it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's there or it's okay. Not there. Now,
exactly.
Look,
third leg.
And I think, you know, third leg. I think people will, you know, some people will raise, well, Andrew, isn't it sometimes that children, babies even, have both parts or weirdly formed parts? Or okay, that's true. You're right. Okay, there are very rare, unusual, difficult cases, but that's not what this is about. This is not about the hard cases. This is about IC3. No, you were wrong. this is not a guess. It's clear as the sunlight or the artificial light or the sonogram. It's really, really obvious.
The board claims this straightforward burn analysis will invite chaos, but schools nationwide have long applied expansive opt-out policies without significant difficulty, including the board itself, which still allows opt-outs for choir students who object to singing religious songs or students who object to certain storybooks, such as one that portrays an image of the Prophet Muhammad. Exempting students for some religious reasons but not others cannot be squared with the First Amendment.
Okay, so here's the thing. The school district is claiming that if you allow parents to opt out their children from English class, this is not health class, which, by the way, I don't think you'd be doing this in health class for the kindergartners anyway. It's English class where they're mandating these books be read. And then if you tell the parents these books are being read in the English class and then you allow them to opt out, it'll be chaos. You'll have children roaming the halls and nobody to supervise them. So instead, we'll just not tell them and we won't allow an opt out. Meanwhile, you do allow opt out for, as you heard him say, if the choir is singing religious songs, parents can opt out. If there's a book that's got a depiction of the Prophet Muhammad in it, well, they can opt out. There's all kinds of opt-out available, but not on this particular subject. Even though a state law in Maryland actually requires that schools allow kids to opt out of all the health-related instruction on sexuality issues, it doesn't specifically require it of an English class where they're brainwashing, teaching you about gender issues. So anyway, continuing with the intro, introductory comments by Eric Baxter.
Nowhere else to go, the board pleads for remand on strict scrutiny. But petitioners have been seeking preliminary relief for 2 years already at significant personal expense. One family moved in with grandparents to afford private school. Another is homeschooling at the loss of $25,000 a year in special services the school provided their daughter with Down syndrome. Most have no alternatives. Petitioners deserve complete preliminary relief. In a system where thousands of students are daily opted in and out of the class for multiple reasons, there's no basis for denying opt-outs for religious reasons.
Right. And what they're basically saying, strict scrutiny is a legal term. It's a level of review. It's the highest level of review. It has to do typically with cases that involve the core rights that you think of, First Amendment, you know, speech, religion, assembly, that kind of stuff. That you have to have the best possible justification for a law that ever affects those. The law is presumptively unconstitutional, or the action is presumptively unconstitutional unless the government can show that it's necessary to achieve a compelling state interest. And once you can show that, you still have to show that the law or the action is designed what's called narrow tailoring. It's got to be very, very narrowly tailored so that it accomplishes that purpose in the way that least restricts, for example, the exercise of religion, or in this case, the, you know, parental opportunity to raise their children in the religious instruction that they want to have them raised in. So the idea here is, if you did this policy, and by the way, it's a very, as many of the cases in front of the Supreme Court, it's a very specific question. It's not a question of whether the school can teach that transgenderism is normal. And that, you know, cisgenderism, the idea that there is a preference to identifying with your biological birth sex, that there's somehow something, you know, preferential about that or normative about that, it's okay for them to teach that. That's allowed. But they have to allow parents to opt out, or that's really the question. So, and nobody in the case is saying they can't teach the idea of accepting alternate sexualities or alternate gender identity. It's just that if you're going to teach that, you got to allow parents to opt out, which they're currently not allowing them to do. That's the question. Because if it goes under strict scrutiny, then obviously it's not the most narrowly tailored or the least burdensome mechanism because they're not allowing the opt out. That's the key.
The board does not dispute that under its theory, it could compel instruction using pornography and parents would have no rights. The First Amendment demands more. Parents, not school boards, should have the final say on such religious matters.
Yeah, they are literally arguing, and if they're right, they're right, that you could teach with pornography in the classroom and they wouldn't have to notify you and you wouldn't have to opt out. Now, by the way, there's a very interesting distinction here, and this is crucial to keep in mind with this case, which, by the way, I'll tell you in advance, I am sure that the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of the parents in this case. The lean indicated by the justices, Gorsuch, Alito, Barrett, Kavanaugh, clearly, you know, Thomas, clearly. The only ones who might go the other way, maybe Ketanji Brown Jackson, maybe Sotomayor and Kagan. So at worst, it's going to be a 6-3 ruling, but it might not even be that close. They're definitely going to rule on the side of the parent. Every observer to the court says so. Because what they're doing here is outrageous and unique among school districts. Like, there aren't any other school districts that we know of anywhere in the country that do this. There's lots of school districts that teach about sexuality issues, but they always allow kids to opt out. They are the parents to opt out, and they always notify them about controversial matters because, you know, for example, for Catholics, it's actually considered a matter of sin to raise and expose your kids to these matters without having good moral instruction along the way. Same for the Muslims, same for the Jews. Like, this is an unacceptable religious infringement. So the question is going to be, and this is where the Supreme Court comes in, is it bad policymaking? It obviously is, but is it unconstitutional? That's the question. Does it burden or infringe religious liberty? Because clearly, if it's just policy, the fact of it being good or bad policy is within the domain of a school board to regulate. School boards have the right, the power, the authority to make bad decisions about what they teach kids. They don't have the right to infringe on a child or an adult's religious liberty or religious expression. And that's where this comes in. So it's very clearly bad policy. The question is whether it's unconstitutional policy. And there are many times where the Supreme Court will say, well, you know, it's not up to us to decide whether it's good policy or not. It is up to us to decide whether it's a violation of the Constitution or not.
One of the schools, the Sherwood School in June, for Pride Month, said that they were going to read one book each day to celebrate Pride Month. The board's own testimony through Superintendent Hazel said that the books must be used as part of the instruction, and that at 642 in the appendix, that discussion will ensue. That was the entire point of withdrawing the opt-outs and removing, even notifying parents. They're not even allowed to know. The board said in that statement it was so that every student would be taught from the inclusivity storybooks.
So every student is supposed to be taught not just from the storybooks themselves, which have to do with, you know, gay marriage, gay playground romance, transgender identity, but also have these follow-up questions and answers in the study guide that's included in the book. It's not like in a teacher's edition. It's actually in the book that's on the shelf in the classroom that is often read from by the teacher. And it has question and answers, like when little Susie asks a question, you know, well, I don't know, I don't think a girl can like a girl. And the teacher is supposed to say, well, no, that's fine. Girls can like girls. You know, that's the answer that's supposed to be given. And it's hurtful and mean of you to say anything other than that. Like, they're really indoctrinating these kids. And that's the question, is whether that is something they cannot do over the parents' objections or not. They can do it. At least it's not the question whether they can. They can teach that. But they have to allow parents to opt out, or at least that's what the question here is.
Do you think it's fair to say that all that is done in Uncle Bobby's wedding is to expose children to the fact that there are men who marry other men?
No, Your Honor. And this court in Obergefell promised that parents would be able to continue to teach what this court called decent and honorable beliefs, that same-sex marriage is immoral, according to their beliefs. And it's a far stretch from that for schools to compel students to attend. Parents are paying taxes. They have to pay at threat of criminal fines or penalties or the expense of private school.
Remember, the Obergefell case was the first gay marriage case where the gays won the right under the Supreme Court's ruling that they had a right to have same-sex marriage. But Obergefell was clear that you were still protected in disagreeing, that you didn't have to agree, and that kids would have, you know, parents would have the right to protect their kids from being taught that everything is normal, everything is fine, there's no rules in sexual ethics. And, well, now we see this playing out, as is not a big surprise, that on down the road, the question is no longer, will you have gay marriage? The question is no longer, will you have decriminalization of all forms of sexual activity? The question is now, not only can we teach in the classroom the gender anarchist's viewpoint, but do you even have a right to remove your kids from that instruction, since all we're doing is teaching about inclusion and equality and kindness and love and respect? That's where we're at. Whether you can prevent your kids from being indoctrinated into this way of thinking by the Constitution.
What are the ages of the children who are involved here?
These books were approved for pre-K, which in Montgomery County can start as early as 3 if they're going to turn 4 that fall.
And it goes up to what?
The books that we've all talked about go through grade 6.
All right, so you're talking about children maybe in the age of 5 to 11 or 4 to 11.
And even the plaintiffs acknowledge that if it were older children, if it were high schoolers, for example, the level of opt-out would not be as strong because young kids at the age of 6 aren't necessarily capable of looking their teacher in the eye and saying, well, you're telling me it's hurtful and that I shouldn't do it, but I have fairly clear ideas about what is and is not appropriate sexual ethics. And, you know, like this conversation, a 7-year-old or a 4-year-old or an 8-year-old standing up to a teacher and saying that is absurd. It's not going to happen. A 9th or a 10th or 11th grader standing up, I mean, of course. And that's why exactly the right to opt out or the right to have, you know, be removed from the classroom if you don't want to be part of that diminishes as the children get older, because they presumably have the capacity to stand up for their own beliefs and stand up to the teacher and not necessarily internalize everything a teacher says as being fact-based, because as Amy Coney Barrett brought up, it seems like you're teaching this the same way you would teach 2 + 2 = 4, and kids aren't really in a position to question whether 2 + 2 = 4 or to question your indoctrinating them that, you know, LGBT ideology is completely normal, right, and any questioning of that is hurtful and mean. So, again, I think this is going to be a 6-3 ruling at worst. It might be more, might be 7-2 or an 8-1. It could be unanimous. By the way, one of the arguments that the other side makes is, this is actually, Ketanji Brown Jackson made this argument, but it's also made by the defendant or the respondents. They make the argument that, well, you can do private school. I mean, you could do homeschool. What's the problem? And even, and this is, we'll get into this throughout the day, but even, you know, there's elections, and if you don't like what the school board is doing, you can engage in an election. What? Like, the Constitution is specifically there to protect you from the majority wanting to do something bad. Whether it's a majority wanting to teach children that transgenderism is inferior or that gay sex is inferior, or whether they want to teach children that all of these things are equal. Either way. You know, like if a sexually liberal parent wants to opt their kids out of instruction in a state that teaches, for instance, that, you know, opposite sex attraction is normative, they should be allowed to opt out if that's a violation of their religion. I mean, no problem. Of course, parents should get to opt out. That's exactly what the Constitution is there to protect against, is the tyranny of the majority. So the idea that, well, you can participate in democracy, and if you lose, tough, your kids get this instruction. The what now? Oh, well, unless you can afford to homeschool them or to put them in private school. 525 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 when Brittany Hughes from Parks and Recreation will be on the show. She'll be discussing summer camps, where they're located, the cost, and how you can apply for a scholarship for your child to attend. She'll also cover deadlines to register, how to register, and will be available for you to call or text in with your questions during the show.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
This is the story of the one. Who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense.
Well, I was born an original sinner. I was born from original sin. And if I had a dollar bill for all the things I've done, there'd be
so we are watching through Seinfeld, which I have not seen all the episodes of, and we're almost to the end. We're in like the end of season 8. I think there's 9 seasons all together anyway, and there's one episode where Elaine goes to find Peterman, who is her boss, and he's on some weird retreaty kind of thing in the wilderness, and he's out there quoting Kurtz, the, you know, Marlon Brando character from Apocalypse Now, and it's homage slash throwback callback to that movie, and I'm dying because they're hilarious. And my wife's like, I don't get it. You know, and you can't explain a joke. I mean, I told her, I said, it's Apocalypse Now. And she's like, oh, you know, and I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, it's one of the greatest movies ever made. Anyway, so, you know, just people have their different things, and I found it entertaining. 528 on News. Of course, that was Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
Well, officials say the driver of that boat that crashed into the ferry on Sunday is cooperating with the investigation. So far, no charges have been filed. Major Evan Laskowski with the FWC says they are currently working with prosecutors to determine whether that crash was a hit and run.
Yeah, and I guess he tested negative for blood alcohol. They found the boat a couple of miles away. They've interviewed him, and he's not being held or charged. And if you've seen the video, I know you were talking about it at the top of the hour, but have you seen the video?
I have not seen
the video. Oh,
you
should watch the video. It's not what I was expecting. The video shows the ferry going in one direction at, it's hard to tell speed, but let's say, maybe 10 or 15 knots, I'm guessing, okay? Maybe less, maybe five. And the boat that hit it is coming from behind and runs right over the back. It looks like kind of the right side, the starboard side of it in the rear, and runs up and over the back.
Ooh.
And then almost I thought maybe the boat would flip in the process. It did not. So it was probably going, whatever boat speed the ferry was going, it looked like the boat was going about twice that speed, maybe 20 knots, something like that. It seemed like it was going relatively fast.
How big a boat was it?
About half the size of the ferry. It's hard to judge. I'm not really great at judging sizes of boats, but, probably 30 feet, I'm guessing, 25 feet maybe, something like that. So, yeah, really violent collision. And then other boaters in the area were helping with the rescue, shining lights, coming close, trying to make sure that, people got the help they needed because the boat, the ferry had lost all of its power.
Well, other headline today, we've got DHL, the delivery company. They are now resuming those shipments from other countries that are worth more than $800. Of course, they had suspended those last month because of new requirements requiring the packages to be formally processed for entry into the country.
All right. Very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. Interesting. The governor announcing expanded red snapper season, record breaking this year.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. Canada's Liberal Party holds on to power in an election moved up by Prime Minister Mark Carney, who was sworn in just last month. The Conservative Party had a huge lead in the polls until President Trump started imposing tariffs and saying Canada should be the 51st state.
President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen.
President Trump holds a rally in Warren, Michigan today, celebrating 100 days back in office, also announcing tariff relief for American automakers.
For the auto part tariffs, they're expected to go in effect this Saturday. He will reimburse the automakers for those tariffs up to 3.75% of the value of a U.S.-made car for 1 year, and then a little bit less after that.
Fox Lawrence Simonetti companies also won't have to pay tariffs on imported metal on top of tariffs on imported parts. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 67 degrees and partly cloudy skies in Pensacola. Well, the Escambia Children's Trust is asking for an exemption from nearly $500,000 in taxes owed for last year. They're hoping to be able to fund the county's summer youth employment program with that money. Executive Director Lindsay Cannon says the tax dollars should support services for vulnerable youth as intended by voters in 2020. Board Chair Mike Kohler, though, tells the News Journal that he would prefer the county manage those funds for infrastructure improvements rather than allowing the trust to dictate the spending. That issue will be on the upcoming agenda for the Board of County Commissioners meeting on May 1st. Well, last week we reported on an unusual arrest in Santa Rosa County where a man became obsessed with a woman, set fire to her home, briefly escaped from a hospital after being arrested and taken there to be checked out, and then was found in a nearby retention pond.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the broad strokes of it. He ends up getting into a retention pond. So he's in a retention pond up to his chest, and he won't come out. And one of our canine units gets there, and he's like, "You come out or the dog... it's coming in to get you," and he won't come out. So the dog, they let the dog go, and it's pretty incredible to see on video. He jumps, the dog's like 3 feet in the air over the water and just hits this guy. And of course, then he starts screaming like a little girl and comes out, and we handcuff him up. It's just a really bizarre story.
And Sheriff Bob Johnson there. And the good news is we'll all get a chance to see that video soon because the cops film crew was with deputies as that ordeal unfolded. Johnson says he's asked cops why they film in small areas like Santa Rosa County, and they said the best stories they've told have come from our area. Well, since a design was unveiled last week for the new toll booths on Pensacola Beach, there's been a lot of community feedback. A lot of it against the design, which was a mostly teal sign with a yellow beach ball sunrise. Hundreds of comments online saying it looked like a bad amusement park sign. Well, it turns out the design was actually based on a website owned by Innisfree Hotels.
Finally, what happened was whoever was designing this came across that website and from a marketing perspective thought, yes, let's keep everything cohesive. Let's put in the Pensacola Beach logo. Let's throw that on there. Let's make it all look the same for branding purposes. Obviously, when everything kind of came to, Innisfree owns the website. The logo is part of, you know, the Innisfree Corporation.
And that's District 4 Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger, who says at first glance, it does appear to be a municipally owned or chamber run type of website, but it's actually owned by Innisfree Hotels to promote their properties on the beach. Now, she did say that a new design is in the works for that signage, and they're hoping to make a big reveal on that sometime this week. Well, Governor DeSantis was in Destin yesterday morning to make an announcement about that Florida Red snapper season, but he was interrupted by a heckler as he made his speech.
But even with that, even with having that type of thing, we've always done the hey man, we got a good that's a fraud. You should be ashamed of yourself for peddling those bogus narratives. So we were able to get to.
And the governor, of course, making that speech in Destin to announce a record-setting 126-day red snapper season for the upcoming year. Nearly 800 illegal immigrants have been arrested in the past week across the state of Florida. That's part of President Trump's immigration policy, according to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They report most of the arrests occurred in major cities like across the state. The operation was dubbed Operation Tidal Wave. 535 at News Radio. Right now we've got 67 degrees in Pensacola, 67 in Gulf Breeze, 65 in Milton. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, and dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. General Motors is set to report its first quarter earnings before the bell this morning. Wall Street analysts expect adjusted earnings per share of $2.74 and revenue of just over $43 billion. GM executives will host an earnings conference call at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Oracle engineers triggered a five-day software outage at a number of community health system hospitals, causing the facilities to temporarily return to paper-based patient records. CNBC reports the outage involving Oracle Health affected several hospitals, leading them to activate downtime procedures. Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai said Waymo's self-driving robo-taxis may be available for personal ownership in the future. The vehicles are currently the only driverless robo-taxis that collect fares on rides in the U.S., with the majority based in San Francisco. Alphabet added that Waymo has been completing more than 250,000 fully autonomous paid rides each week. Futures are slightly higher. That's Your Money Now.
It's always Sonny's here. This is Eldon with Sonny's Barbecue. When you're ready for slow smoke barbecue prepared by local pitmasters since 1968, it's always Sonny's. Visit us at four convenient locations in the News Radio area: Pine Forest, Navy Boulevard, 9th Avenue, and in Pace on Highway 90. With $10 big deals and all-you-can-eat ribs for only $19.99 every day. Kids eat free every Saturday, and don't forget that good old banana pudding. All served with a heaping portion of Southern hospitality. Open daily at 10:45. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to the Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to the Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. As you heard David talking about there, we had a very interesting conversation yesterday with Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger about two topics, the turfing or potential turfing for $20 to $25 million of the ball fields on 9 Mile where NEP plays from current grass and dirt into artificial turf. That's something that the county commission might be voting on this Thursday. You also, we talked a lot about the proposed welcome sign to Pensacola Beach, where you're going to have a toll booth incorporated within it. They're going to get rid of the existing toll booth and create a more of a free-flowing structure. And in as part of that sign, you'll have the toll collection mechanism and some of the costs involved. We had, like I said, a really good conversation with her about this yesterday. Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Before we do any of the important stuff, how did you eat yesterday at Men Who Cook, and who had the best dish?
Oh, it was so good. So I think my favorite dish, of course, yours. Yours was phenomenal. The bites were amazing.
No, you don't. I'm just joking. You don't have to answer. It's like fine. Everything's good. It's a great event. It was good to see you yesterday.
I love it.
And the Pace Center is such a great organization. All right, let's before we get into some of the like design questions around the Pensacola Beach welcome sign, let's just sort of clear the air with a couple of the quick facts. First thing, the roughly $700,000 to tear down the existing toll booth and put up some kind of a toll system, somewhere in the order of $1.5 million if that new toll system involves a decorative sign or arch or something along those lines. Is that basically right?
Correct.
Okay.
And the slideshow that I just sent over has some of that breakdown if you want to share that with the viewers.
Great. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I had shared some of it earlier in the day, but and there's also additional elements of this like fiber optic and restriping and better lighting and landscaping. So the total cost of the project, which is being provided in a bunch of different forms, is not all focused on just the one sign. It's really that $1.5 million. Second question, and this is just to make sure, because if having read the 400 or so comments on our Facebook page, a lot of people didn't get this. Tear down the old toll booth means install a new toll collection mechanism. We're not getting rid of the toll, right?
Correct. Great question. So the facade, and everyone was talking about, oh, well, we don't need a sign. We need something to cover up the tolling equipment. Otherwise, it's a very industrial look, and it almost looks like a Kinect set with cameras. So obviously,
right.
We don't want that as our welcome to Pensacola Beach. Thanks for coming. So adding some sort of artistic feature to that was the goal, not necessarily alerting people that they're at Pensacola Beach.
Right, and that's, you know, if you've ever seen how FDOT does notification signs, it's that big garish steel piping kind of, like you said, Kinect set look, and we don't want that. We definitely don't want that.
We don't want that.
The third question is, and again, this is just kind of because I know people have these questions, just to make sure we clear the air. How did the Innisfree logo become the preferred design?
So that's interesting. The Innisfree logo is actually a yellow sunset against a orange ombre sky. The logo that is being used is from a website that Innisfree owns, PensacolaBeach.com. So in the Wayback Time Machine, Innisfree had requested that Visit Pensacola buy PensacolaBeach.com and use it to market Pensacola Beach. At the time, Visit Pensacola said, no, we're not going to do that. So Innisfree picked up the website, purchased it, and used it to market Pensacola Beach and highlighting their properties. So when you log on to PensacolaBeach.com, unless you know specifically what properties Innisfree owns, which obviously us as a community, most of us know that. If we didn't prior to a week ago, we probably all know that now. But from the outside looking in, that website is very generic, and it almost looks municipality-owned or chamber-ran, something of that nature. So I believe what happened was whoever was designing this came across that website and from a marketing perspective thought, yes, let's keep everything cohesive. Let's put in the Pensacola Beach logo. Let's throw that on there. Let's make it all look the same for branding purposes. Obviously, when everything kind of came to, Innisfree owns the website. The logo is part of, you know, the Innisfree Corporation, not necessarily the Innisfree logo. So once we found that out, we're back at the drawing board to make sure that we provide differentiation between the website, visit Pensacola or PensacolaBeach.com, and the actual sign itself. So we do want something that is inclusive and iconic and timeless, not something that is tied to a website that is privately owned.
Perfect, and I agree with that. And okay, so last, just kind of getting the facts out question. Honestly, I hate to ask this one, but I know people have asked this, and I'm just going to ask. The color of the sign, that kind of dark teal, is very similar to the color of the washroom, a business you own. Would you care to address the similarity in the color?
Oh, I like teal until it was beachy. I had a retro camper, and it was also teal. So I'm just a fan of teal. I didn't even think about it going with the washroom, so that is an interesting perspective. Well, I will say some of the feedback that we – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I didn't even think about that.
It was one of those questions that some people had asked, and I thought, well, you know, this is the way people get when they're in a contrarian frame of mind. You know what I'm saying? They'll find anything to hang their opposition
on. They'll find anything. Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you look at the beach and the water and the waves, a lot of that is teal. Like, teal is just a very beachy color.
Right.
Some of the feedback that we received that we're working on putting into the sign was it does need more color. Maybe it needs a pop of orange. Specifically, somebody said sherbet orange. I'm thinking, okay, well, that really goes. So we are working on a rendering that has a little bit more color. It also has the letters beach bigger. So
more prominent, yeah.
And beach would be the same size. Yeah, so great feedback that we received. And we're actually hoping to have an updated rendering out this week. Someone also recommended kind of tying it to the beach ball colors and then the sign at the foot of the bridge going to Pensacola Beach, the Pensacola Beach sign, and making it more like that, which I love that. We just have to be careful because those are very primary colors for it not to look like a kindergarten classroom.
Right.
So the question is, how do we keep it looking good and bright and tying to those without it looking too elementary? So we are working on that.
So Commissioner Hofberger, the question that I hear a lot and that I read on our Facebook page a lot is, why didn't we have public input? Why don't we go through a process of submissions, selections, top three? It doesn't necessarily have to have public voting, but it should have something where we can really look at the alternatives and say, we've picked something that we love, whether that's a green base. Maybe it would have turtles on it. Maybe it would have dolphins on it. Maybe it would have, you know, turtle style amber lighting at night for accent, but similar to the turtle friendly. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities, but why not a process that we would go through? Might take a little while, might take a month or two, instead of the, well, you know, the commissioner's going to pick and we're going to do what we do.
Great question. So, and this was one of those things, it was, we decided to make a decision with the general design and move forward and then allow people to email us their comments, email us their input. If we would have done an actual public meeting, there's several notices that you have to go through. Those have to be ran a certain way, and it would have actually pushed us because we only want to do physical work on the project in the off season, obviously, because you don't want to be driving to the beach 4th of July weekend. And, you know, we've got lane closures. That's not good for anybody. So with those timelines, having an actual meeting or two would have pushed it to where it would have been completed by summer of 2026. It also makes it very hard for families who are working or single parents or maybe people who are holding down two jobs to go to those meetings. So we felt as though allowing people to comment on Facebook, us evaluate those, or send us, like we requested through several media outlets, to email us your comments, and allowed more people in the community to be more involved. So we really want to, and it, you know, it's using technology, right? Like, so email us your comments. We've got a record of all of that. I've responded to every email personally that has came in, whether it's a friendly email or a not friendly email. So I really do want people to know that we are paying attention to those. And then as far as putting it out to local artists, we have so many talented folks in the area. Part of that was we do have to go through a RFP process And so we do have to be careful how we select those. There are certain state statutes and things that govern that. Obviously, anybody that submits something, they have to be compensated for that. And
right. So
that part gets a little hairy when you're a municipality trying to solicit design work.
Well, so here's my suggestion, okay? Obviously, you're the commissioner. You were elected. My suggestion would be I can live with it taking an extra year. I want the thing to be done. I want it to be cost effective. But this is going to be a 50-year project in the sense that we're going to still be looking at this in 50 years. And so we want something that's really amazing. And if that takes pushing it back to being completed by summer of 2027, I can live with that rather than having something that we don't all love. And to me, the best way to get something that we do love and that we do all believe in and that the community feels like they bought into is let's do a submission process. You know, the city did this very effectively with the Pelican sign. We got an amazing thing there. And so that seems to be the way.
It's interesting you bring that up because the Pelican sign, I love it. It's beautiful. I think it's iconic. I think it's going to be a great fixture to tie Pensacola Beach to the bridge and to downtown and really make that a beautiful corridor. But there are still people who hate that sign or they think that was a bad decision or that was a dumb location. Obviously, that's not me. I just said it was a great piece. But with design work and art in general is very subjective to whoever is viewing it. And, you know, if you can barely agree on the house or a color to paint your house with your wife or yourself,
of
right?
Course.
So the idea that the whole community isn't going to agree on one thing and think that, okay, this is absolutely the best and 100% of us agree is, I don't think that's a very practical idea.
Okay, so it sounds to me like you're still opposed to having any kind of a submission process. It's really still going to be you guys picking?
So we are, like I said, we are asking people to email us your suggestions, email us your recommendations. And then I know P&J just read an article. This is going to be a two-part process. So I have a meeting today to see exactly what those two parts are. So I don't know if that's going to be more around the end product and the design of the arch itself, or if it's going to be the landscaping. So some of that will be coming. But again, if you have ideas, send them in. I've had people say, hey, this is, you know, we should do Pelican Perches on the side and this is what it would look like. And they sent me an AI rendering. So absolutely send those in. So just because we don't have pictures from you to pick from doesn't mean that we're not open to suggestions and recommendations because we are 100% are.
And if artists want to submit something, same thing. And this would be what, District 4, the number 4 at MayaScambia.com?
Absolutely. And like I said, I have responded to all of those emails personally, and it is District4@MayaScambia.com.
Very good. The other thing that I wanted to talk with you briefly about was the $25 million plan to put turf on the 9 Mile ball fields in the effort of generating tourism by being able to host tournaments. We had a very involved discussion about this the other day. I was surprised because I don't really know this topic all that well. I coached one kickball here, t-ball there kind of thing. But John, my producer, who coached for 10 years, his kids and Little League and other people texted and said they are not believers in turf. They don't believe this will be the miracle tourism draw. They host ball games at Para in Santa Rosa County that has regular fields. And they say instead we could spend a lot less money if we could just improve drainage, improve amenities, and, you know, maybe do some sodding or something like that for a much lower price tag, given that $25 million is a lot of money and is really just a swag at this point, right? Like, that's just they measured the fields and they did a rough math. They didn't do an RFP or anything, so we don't really know that it's going to be $25 million. And also concerns about safety that, you know, even though some people love turf, some people really can't stand turf, the heat in the summer, it's very difficult to plan and so forth. So I know you're on the council and you voted for this, but these concerns seem pretty significant to me, and I didn't hear a lot of those raised in the conversation. It seemed like we approved $25 million pretty quickly. Have you talked with people who are contrary on this project at all and heard from them?
So we actually had a great conversation at that board meeting. Councilwoman Brayer brought up the science behind how the turf is manufactured and how it could be a negative impact on the environment, and the head of our parks department actually spoke to that. So the turf that we're going with is more environmentally friendly. It is heat resistant. So, and I know that people have this for their dogs too, right? So their dogs can walk around on the AstroTurf and it not burn their paws. So similar manufacturing process from what I'm being told on that side of it. And the idea of having turf over the regular sod is we have so many of those pop-up rain showers. And the most important part is that the people who visit our community are able to get their tournaments in. So with the AstroTurf, after the rain shower's gone, they can get back out on the field and they can continue to play. And there's also less downtime between the games because the fields don't have to be prepped as much. So those tournaments, you can actually have more games at one location is what I was told as far as.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree with all of that. I'm just saying the people who are critical of this choice are saying we can still get the tournaments in. We can still take care of the kids. And even with, you know, the questions about the heat or the PFAS or anything like that, still turf carries, you know, risks. Injury level is higher on turf because of the nature of the thing. And all I'm asking is, it didn't seem like that slice of contrary thinking had been represented in the meeting. The ones who really say, we don't actually need it for this price tag. We can do something that's effectively the same by improving those. Because the fields need improving. Nobody argues that. They're terrible fields. The question is, can we get the end result of better fields without having to invest $25 million? That was the question. And I hadn't heard that.
That's a good question. Absolutely think that's a good question. You also have to look at who we're competing with. So there are other communities on the Gulf Coast who have similar ballparks. This one would really set ours apart. So the idea is ours is prettier, ours is better. We're on the beach. We're a 20-minute drive from Pensacola Beach. So all of these things would add into bringing in more games and being a superior place to play compared to the surrounding areas.
Well, I look forward to the conversation. Is that going to be on Thursday? Is that on the agenda for Thursday?
I don't know if that one is or not. I think there were still some details that they were trying to work out that I will absolutely check.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking forward to the agenda. Because a lot of stuff, the TDC spent, what, like $36 million or recommended. So lots of things that could.
It was a big spend day.
$12 million an hour, not too bad. Ashley Hoffberger, she is the commissioner for District 4. Ashley, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for answering my questions and, you know, responding to people and being, you know, open to some alternatives, especially with that sign. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. You have a great day.
Most definitely. And by the way, you know, I didn't mention this. I actually feel bad, John. One of the things about that discussion about the ball fields that I really admired Ashley Hoffberger for in the conversation at the TDC was she brought up the question of, well, can we just do half? You know, what's the need to spend $25 million? Can we just do, you know, half the project and see how it goes? Yeah. You know, makes sense. She has told me since that, you know, she will bring that up as a possibility when they talk about this. It looks like Thursday they're going to actually have this conversation.
Fix the parking lot? Too.
There's actually $5 million in it for other matters. I'm not quite sure what the other matters are, but concessions and lighting, I think maybe. Not necessarily the parking, but... Yeah, it's okay.
So, yes, sir.
5:56 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Gathering at Pensacola Beach is a wonderful family experience. If you've thought about having a family celebration or an amazing beach wedding, there is a very special home now available, Casa de Luna. Casa de Luna is spacious with room for large families. It has 9 large bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views. The pool has a new 4,000 BTU gas heater. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on the ground level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the ground level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly, and another has a jacuzzi tub. There is a large gaming porch with a pool table, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna at 850-433-4855. That's 850-433-4855.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
This message is sponsored by the Florida A&M University Medical Marijuana Education and Research Initiative, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Mary on Demand is live. Start your marijuana education journey today. Learn at your own pace and check out the Medical Marijuana Education Series. You decide what you'd like to learn and when with Mary on Demand. Visit mary.famu.edu. That's mmeri.famu.edu. And remember, recreational marijuana is still illegal in Florida. Mary, educate, learn, talk.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News, 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Excuse me for not knowing about El Salvador, like I'm ever going to Spain anyway.
You know, this issue of the ball fields really does raise an observation, which is if people oppose the $25 million, who's really going to spend time to show up to the county commission to say no to this? You know, like, who's going to be motivated to be the no speaker other than the sort of regular attendees who go all the time for stuff anyway? I mean, I can talk about it, you know, and the questions that people have raised about fixing the drainage. You have to do that anyway for the turf, but who's the constituent interest that's motivated enough to go to a commission meeting, sit through it all, and say no to this?